Richard Kennedy is a solicitor from Birr in County Offaly. He and his wife Rita own a boat, Shockroan, and over the last 2 years, they took it on a very slow trip around Ireland. He's written a book, Round Ireland by Slow Boat. Earlier, they came into studio and told me why they decided to take this trip and why they took their time about it.
Well, myself and Rita had been sailing for years and we'd done a lot of sea sailing. And we had then, in latter years, spent most of our time on Lough Derg. We love sailing, but we were always bound up with schedules and time and work. And there were many occasions when I was sailing where I found that, in fact, I was even doing work when I was sailing it. So we felt that this was an opportunity to take our own time back and enjoy the time we have to ourselves and enjoy it in the way that we love to spend our time, which is sailing.
You first decided you were going to do it over one summer, but that went on, it became over two summers.
Well, it did. That wasn't part of the plan. And in fact, the beauty about our plan was that if circumstances changed, we actually could change our plan, and that is a wonderful thing. And so because the first year the weather was simply so bad, and our progress
that was 2017
and our progress was simply so slow, that by the time we had nearly three quarters of it done, we had the most beautiful part to finish, and that would be the coast of Cork and Kerry and up along to Galway, and that is absolutely exquisite. And if we wanted to completed that year, we would have to just race along the headlands and tick off the headlands as we passed, leaving all that beauty behind. And that made the whole thing pointless. And so rather than just tick boxes to say we did it, no, we want to do it properly. So in fact, we sailed back to Waterford, left the boat there for the winter.
You'd come all the way around, down as far as West Cork,
we started
and
in Galway,
went back.
Up Sligo, Donegal, down Northern Ireland and the East Coast. And so the end was only maybe 2 weeks away. But why rush it when we could do it all over again? So that's what we did. And we started then from Waterford again and had the most exquisite sailing in that absolutely wonderful summer of 2018.
Rita, had you both done much sailing? You had both done quite a lot, but you were the original sailor.
Well, the original sailor in the sense that I had done a two-week course with Glen Anne's with my sister a long time ago, and I had sailed on the Asgard and done a little bit of dinghy sailing. And because I had done that one summer, just after we got married, I persuaded Richard to do a dinghy course, which he did. And from then on, he just really took to it and he loved it.
The boat, Shockroan, tell me about her, 34 feet.
It's a 34-foot steel sailing boat. It was built by lovely man Tom Mackey in Waterford. It's what's called a spray design. So it's a very, very good, solid sailing boat. Roomy enough for two of us.
Yeah, the pictures show there's quite a lot of cabin room down below.
There is, and it is. It wouldn't be the fastest boat on earth, but at the same time, you feel safe in it. And especially when you're out in the Atlantic swell, you have a certain sense of we're going to be okay. It'll get us through it.
There's one thing that surprised me about it, looking at the pictures. The keel is quite shallow.
It is. It's a long keel, and it's our draft is slightly under 4 feet. So that makes it a comfortable sailing boat, but it wouldn't be perfect in terms of close quarters manoeuvring or sailing close to the wind. But it's a good, solid, heavy sailing boat.
You started off your Round Ireland trip, and I have to say my record for going around Ireland is 4 days.
Yes.
I've done it a little bit longer as well. But you started in June 17 in Rossaville, and the first 2 weeks were in fact the hardest 2 weeks you had.
To some extent they were, and it was a great way to start at some level, because we got our hardship out of the way in the early stages, and it sort of seasoned us for the rest of it. Any hard bits that came after that were we could take it in our stride. We left Aaron Moore up in Donegal And the weather was pretty bad. And I was saying that if that weather and that sea had been out there when we left Rosseville, I would have just turned tail and gone back.
Because going up through, up along the coast of Connemara, and a bit of island hopping, yes. A lot of shoals, a lot of rocks to avoid, yes. It was hard sailing.
There had been a lot of... That 2017 was very unsettled weather. There was a lot of wind and storm. Now, we weren't out in the wind and storm, but there was a lot of swell all the time. So the sea was, even on nice days, was rough enough.
Do you ever feel like stopping, giving up? You did put in a couple of places for one, two nights?
We stayed longer.
We had to.
Yeah, in Blacksod we were about...
10 days.
Or seven or eight days. And
every time we went to leave...
You had the forecast just changed.
One thing that struck me, how important... Now, you had a GPS, you had a mobile phone, but getting the weather forecast on the radio was very important for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, nowadays we all have weather apps as well, which is, to some extent, the worst thing you can do, because you will have your wind guru and your XC weather. But the difficulty is very few of them agree. So then you can't sail and choose the weather forecast you'd like. You know, so the difficulty is knowing which is the more accurate. And then, of course, you get your weather station forecasts around the coast as well.
So that is the Met Air and the, yes. The stations, then the radio stations around the coast, that That's is the mm-hmm. Coast Guard stations, rebroadcast those throughout
yes.
the day.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But generally, you know, they are correct. They are accurate. But forecasts can never be absolutely pinpointed to a small location.
Okay.
So what's going to happen between Loophead and Errishead will have local variations as well.
Yeah. You had, of course, some difficulties, one or two with the boat, and Rita, you ended up in the water a couple of times.
Yes. No, they were just this awful screeching started coming out of... Well, the engine, but we...
And this is very early on.
Yes, and we identified it as coming from the propeller. So I was sent down, into the water and ducked down as far as I could and had a good look at the propeller, which was spotless. It was grand. But it was cold, and it took a...
You're wearing a wetsuit.
Which was about two sizes too small for me. It took about an hour to get into it.
Yeah, that was one thing that intrigued me. We were waiting throughout the book for the engine to fail. It actually never did in the end.
No,
didn't. No, the engine didn't. Was perfect. The problem was the propeller.
Yeah, to get a bit technical, you need a little bit of seawater to lubricate the shaft where it goes through the hull, and you hadn't let water in.
Yes.
Very simple thing.
Very simple thing. And a very simple thing to overlook when you're launching a boat.
Yeah.
You say there was engine trouble, which there was. But one of the things, I brought something to it as well, and that's my capacity to worry as well and to foresee disasters and catastrophes. You know, you never know.
When you were going up the west coast and going very close into shore, you talked about how important pilotage was, that is, you have your cruising notes, which is a big thick book that you buy, and you have your GPS, but you're still plotting yourself.
Yes, it's hugely important, because first of all, from experiences in the past, and it seems Luddite, but I would never totally rely on the GPS, especially in close quarters.
Yeah, you're in a minority there now.
I know I am. Mm-hmm. I know I am. But they are great, but there have been occasions when power went or something and I was left without a GPS. And at that point, you have to know where you are. And when you are identifying by landmarks and islands, it can be very, very difficult, because it's easy to pick on one point and say, oh, that's such and such a point. But if you've got that wrong, all of your interior map in your head is wrong and you're sailing into danger.
Because when you're at sea looking at the shore, it all kind of looks the same.
It merges into one. Islands merge in with the land, and one headland looks pretty much the same as another one, especially if it's poor weather or hazy or drizzly.
So when you then got to Donegal, right up to the north, and got it over Malin Head, you then started to take bigger jumps.
Yes, we did. We went when we got to Rathlin, it was a couple of big leaps down to Glenarm, I think, and then down to Bangor, and then long
Carlingford, Howth, Arklow, and then you were almost in Rosslare in a couple of pages.
Exactly, that's it. The shortest chapters I've ever seen, actually.
Yeah. You found coming down the Irish Sea relatively easy.
It was very easy.
Much easier, yes. The weather, I think, was a bit better. But also, we were out of the swell. And, you know, every place we went on the west coast, the swell was contrary, the wind was contrary, everything was working against us. So the progress was slow. Whereas once we got away from that, going down the east coast, it was much more straightforward and easier. And no swell.
And that led to a little embarrassment in the Howth Yacht Club, because we were chatting to some very nice guys who were going out, and we told them about the trip, and they were impressed with it, and asked how we found the West Coast, and Rita told them that the Atlantic swell is no joke. And then she added, as an afterthought, by the way, the Irish Sea where you sail, it's only a duck pond. And they didn't like that.
You then went all the way down to West Cork and you decided you're going to prolong the trip.
Yes. We had got as far as Baltimore. And when we were in Baltimore, this was about maybe 7 weeks after we'd started. When we got to Baltimore, the weather sort of turned bad again. There was a gale and there was another one forecast in the next couple of days. And we knew that we could sit it out and then head up the west coast to get back to Galway. But it really would be rushing the most beautiful part of the journey. But then we decided to bring it back to Waterford, leave it there for the winter, and start the trip again from Waterford, which sort of gave us nearly 1.5 times around Ireland, which was fabulous.
That was the beauty of having no fixed schedule.
Exactly.
At the time we were making that decision, it was almost like a failure, like we haven't done what we set out to do. But once we reconciled ourselves to it, we thought, no, it's not. It's our trip. We do what we like. And in fact, it was the best decision we made. It was great.
There were a couple of things that struck me when you were sailing around into all these tiny ports. You almost always found a helping hand of somebody on shore.
It was incredible. If people say to me, What was your greatest memory of it? You would expect the answer to be the beauty of the coast, the beauty of the headlands, the beauty of bays and that. But actually, it was people. The number of people that everybody we encountered, almost everybody that we encountered on our trip around Ireland, was just so lovely and so wonderful and so helpful. And people would just put themselves out of the way to help you. And the kindness to strangers is something which is unusual. Maybe it's something to do with coastal communities or something, but it was absolutely fabulous.
Finding a mooring in each one of these little places you went to?
Sometimes there are difficulties.
And that there weren't enough.
There weren't enough, and the ones that were there, a lot of them are unfortunately not, these are, say, council moorings, are not very well maintained. So to some extent, you are better off anchoring if you can. Now, some people may not be totally comfortable with anchoring, or for whatever reason, it may prove a difficulty. But I think probably there is scope, especially along the west coast, there is scope for a lot more and more secure moorings.
Yeah. Mm. Also, the visitors' moorings are, they can be really difficult to tie up to, because they don't have there's just a ring on them and you have to try and get.
So you're aiming for a little boy, which maybe is slightly bigger than a football. There's a ring in the top. Yeah. You're floating along, trying to get your rope through that ring.
Yes.
Back to yourself.
There were a few times trying to get onto visitors' moorings was a nightmare. A few times we just weren't able to do it.
One or two other things struck me. Rita, tell me about your flower pot heater. I'd never heard of something like this before.
Oh, one of my brothers told me about it a long time ago, and we looked it up on the internet, and it's an interesting little idea. You just have four night lights and you invert a small terracotta flower pot over them, and you put a coin on top of the little hole so it's sealed, and then you put another bigger terracotta pot over that again. The inside one becomes very hot, and after about 5 minutes you get this lovely flow of warm air out from the top one. And I had seen about it, but then when we were on the boat and it was actually very cold that first summer, and it was a lifesaver that year because it was cold.
The obvious question is that how does a couple get on at such close quarters? It's sometimes quite stressful, but he has some things to say about you, Rita. He said, your quiet fortitude, and another stage he says, my admiration for her knew no bounds.
He has to write a book for me to find out When there's only the two of you, it's easier to get on because there are no outside, you know, you're not fighting over outside things. There's just the two of you. So there's less going on in your life. So there's less to disagree about. And plus, we were involved in a project together, and that took up our time and our energy. And, you know, Richard was a skipper, so there was a sort of hierarchy there in certain areas, which helped things. And in terms of... you asked him earlier about pilotage and navigation and all that. He's very good at that. He's an excellent navigator and everything. So I had total and absolute trust in him when we were out in the boat in terms of where we were going, that we were going in the right place. And apart from that, the two of us worked well together. We had fights when we were getting ready to go on the trip because it was all these lists and pressures and timetables. We had hardly stepped off the boat then real life started to come in and there was disagreements about things. But no, it was actually really nice. Very little.
Now, Richard, as a last question, the way you finished the journey, you went up through Limerick, over the Weir in Limerick City,
yes,
up through Ardna Croise.
That's it, yes.
Not the easiest thing to do. Why did you decide to go over the Weir, which has, it's a waterfall at low tide?
It's a waterfall at low tide. It was because there, over the last couple of years, there have been difficulties with the timetables in the lock you get through from the sea to the river. And it's slightly irregular as a time scale. And if we come up from Kilrush, we need to get through onto the river on the same day because, unfortunately, there's nowhere to stay for the night under that lock.
Okay, so there are no moorings, there's no pontoon.
There's no moorings. Okay. There is a pontoon, but unfortunately, that has been taken over by, I think, a rescue group, but there's no space to moor onto it. And it's a busy shipping lane as well because there's a harbour in Limerick. So we had no choice but to go for that, and we got wonderful help from the most lovely man, another one of the most helpful people, Pat Lysett, who is an expert in that area, and he's so nice and he's so good, and he knew exactly the time of the tide for us to go over, and he led us over, and it was a tense moment as we went over.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful feeling when you got over it. We had probably a couple of inches below our keel when we went through, and the difficulty is if you got that wrong by a couple of inches the other side, well, you know, where would you end up?
You wouldn't have tried it in a boat that didn't have such a shallow keel.
No, I wouldn't. Because even that tide was a very high tide and we still only had a couple of inches to spare.
You described it in the book as a journey of a different kind.
Yes, it was. It's called Round Ireland by Slow Boat, and that gives the impression that it is just a sailing book, but it's not. It was a journey, to some extent, for myself and Rita as well. And after a number of years of marriage, Rita will fill me in on the technicalities. It's nice for a couple to get back closer again. In the middle years of your life tends to maybe drive you slightly apart because of work and children and all of the other pressures. And then if you start coming back in closer again and becoming more sensitive, I suppose, to each other. That's nice. So that, to some extent, was a bit of a journey as well. You know, no, it wasn't too far a journey, I hope.
And everybody managed fine without us.
Yes.
You mentioned at one stage that you, having met people along the way, that you might try the Baltic at some stage.
I'd love to. We met Fergus and Kay Quinlan, and they had sailed to St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
And it, their descriptions of the voyage was so absolutely wonderful. Now, I think really for us that might be a little bit too ambitious, but something like the Caledonian Canal in through Scotland, I would absolutely love to do. And to some extent, it's not where you go. What I learned from this, and the, writing the book was such a joy to me, I really loved it. But what I learned from it is that it's the journey doesn't really make any difference to some extent where you start or where you finish. It's the doing of the journey itself is the wonderful part. And that was wonderful for us.
It's never about the journey, you're just thinking about the finish.
Yeah, that was my difficulty right through the start. For the first week or 2 weeks, I'm like that. As Rita calls it, anywhere but here. So I've now arrived in Inishturk. I need to be somewhere else. But after a while, when we got up around to Donegal, then I started to relax and started to think I'm in the present, I'm in the now. And that, but that didn't work on the day Rita wanted to go shopping. I wasn't allowed to be in the now at that stage.
But you see, I think while somebody else would see it as a one journey, it was actually loads of small little journeys. You know, we set off from Inishturk and we went to Little, and then a couple of days later you're setting off and you have a journey to Blacksod, which was quite long, difficult. So for us, or for me anyway, it was small journeys.
What was your favourite stop? Name one favourite place.
One favourite place was Salrock, Little Killary Harbour, where we had to make a sort of a fraught run for shelter from Inishturk. And it was, we sat out a gale in there, and it was just so beautiful because we were the only ones, the only boat in there. There are no roads as such around there, and we had the entire bay to ourselves, and with the hills on either side. It was our own place and our own time, and there were no distractions, nothing. It was fabulous. But then, you know, everywhere was nice, actually. Everywhere had somewhere nice.
I think everybody listening is envying you your time that you were able to give to this. The book is called Round Ireland by Slow Boat by Richard Kennedy, published by Through the Chair Publishing.
Through the Chair Publishing, but that's my own name that I put on it.
Where can people find the book?
Get it direct from me. I've got a website and also a Facebook page. So the website is roundirelandbyslowboat.net or Facebook Round Ireland by Slow Boat. And I have a list on that of the places it can be purchased. So it can be purchased directly through me, through the website, or the various shops around the place. There's Charlie Burns in Galway, and there's Midland Books in Tullamore, and there's the Inland Waterways Association, and a few more places which are on the website, and there will be more places. And it's also available as a Kindle book as well.
And if you ever think of taking that journey yourself, or even just dream about it, Richard's book is an engaging and entertaining read, and really is an invaluable guide to some of the small anchorages around the coast. And as a last word, I was around the south coast earlier in the week, and the number of Portuguese man-of-war jellyfish really has to be seen to be believed. They've been blown along the south and west coast in their hundreds of thousands by Storm Lorenzo, and they are extremely dangerous, even when they're dead and lying on a beach. You recognise them by the purple air sac on their top. There are lots of them in the sea and many hundreds of thousands along beaches. Keep away from them and make sure your dog stays away from them as well.